In terms of moving forward with the superintendent search, I think there's really a couple of things that are important for school committees to know when they're in these circumstances. The first is, of course, that this is one of your core responsibilities.
This is Steve Schrock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session of the radio show shares the Franklin Mass School Committee Superintendent Search Workshop held on Tuesday, February 8, 2022. The meeting was conducted in person in the third floor training room at the municipal building. All of the school committee members were present. MASC Field Director Tracy Novick provided the insights on the superintendent replacement options and answered questions along the way. Lisa Traynor, the Franklin Public Schools Human Resources Director, also participates. The recording of the meeting runs about 56 minutes. Links to the meeting agenda and my notes are included in the show notes. So let's listen to the workshop of February 8, 2022.
And everyone, Tracy Novick, our field director for MASC. So Tracy, I will kick it off to you.
Okay, fantastic. And by all means, keep chewing because this is the part where I talk, so please feel free. So those of you who are on the committee each should have a packet in front of you, which I am not going to read from because this isn't that kind of a presentation, but it is for your own reference, because I find that committee members like to make sure that they've got sort of all of their backup, right? And you want to go home and feel like you've got something to answer all of your questions as you need them. But the other thing that is on there is also a piece of paper that I want to urge you to use as you need, which is that, as was mentioned, I am actually your field director as well. And so kind of regardless of the business of the committee, part of what you have the association for is to ask questions, confirm things, get further training, all of those kinds of things. It's why we exist. We exist entirely for the purposes of the school committees of Massachusetts. We did a little bit of rejiggering in terms of lines, so I am your field director. I effectively come out to 495 and then go out as far as the Connecticut River Valley. As most of you know, I live in Worcester, where I also serve on the school committee. So you are not far afield. You're not taking someone out from Boston. And I do want to just urge you, email, cell phone, you have those that information for a reason, so please feel free to use it on anything that you have questions on. In terms of moving forward with the superintendent search, I think there's really a couple of things that are important for school committees to know when they're in these circumstances. The first is, of course, that this is one of your core responsibilities. So any of you who've been through charting the course or been through any of our training know that effectively we boil the main responsibilities of the school committees down to four, five if you add collective bargaining. And you know, once you get through policy and goal setting and budget, you've got hiring a superintendent, evaluating a superintendent. And so this really is one of your big jobs, and it only comes up every so often. And so I just, you know, want to make sure that this is your job, it is your responsibility. Chapter 71 is very, very clear about it being the school committee's job to hire a superintendent. The second thing that I think is probably the most important thing for you to know is that when it comes to hiring a superintendent, aside from the usual parameters under which you meet, the law is silent. So you as a committee can only make a decision when you're in a properly posted meeting with a quorum. You all know that. So long as you are in a properly posted meeting with an agenda that is clear, you can move forward with hiring a superintendent, so long as that person is licensed or able to be licensed under the Massachusetts regulations. That is the only requirement for any school committee hiring a superintendent. You do not, there is no requirement accorded in terms of process. There's no requirement in terms of posting. You can move forward with hiring a superintendent so long as you as a quorum are in a meeting in which you have signaled your intent through an agenda to move forward with hiring a superintendent. And so long as that person either is licensed or can be licensed, that is an entirely legal thing for you to do and happens, frankly, frequently. Questions? Yes.
Yes, sorry. Do you mind taking them during?
No, absolutely. I should have said that.
So that when you say has the ability to get licensed, does
yes.
that mean like before the start date or within a year?
As some of you probably know, there are several levels of licensure in Massachusetts. It is fairly straightforward for any administrator who already has an administrative license to move into having the initial licensure. And then they effectively go through on-the-job training. There's a certain number of hours, much like teachers have to do in-service, so does the superintendent. New superintendents generally are part of the superintendent induction program through MASS anyway. And effectively, it's making sure that they've actually completed hours under the tutelage of someone to ensure that they actually have the levels of competency involved, and then they can move through the rest of the process. But yes, they can get that initial certification, so long as they effectively are either an administrator in Massachusetts. We don't have reciprocal licensure in Massachusetts with other states. Effectively, like if you're taking someone from Pennsylvania or wherever, they don't automatically get a license. But if they meet the particular boxes, again, it's usually fairly straightforward to get the initial licensure and then be able to move into the other levels. Yep.
So I guess I'm wondering, Tracy, if, I know it doesn't happen that often, but is it possible to waive our superintendents for the first year while they obtain the relationship?
So usually the state doesn't usually grant waivers, although they have, and in fact, in some cases, that makes the Boston Globe when they do. But generally speaking, most of the superintendents I have seen who aren't already licensed as superintendents usually have the ability to get that initial license. So there are places in which the department does waive the requirement, but usually you have to be able, as you know, with other kinds of waivers, you have to be able to show particular kinds of need. I think there was a hand over here. Did we actually answer whatever that question was? Okay, I thought there might be overlap. Yes. No, and I would much rather answer your questions as we go to make sure that everybody's sort of on the same page as we're moving through. So just to be very clear then about what that means, and this happens honestly very commonly in Massachusetts, I would say that of the openings that we see over the course of an average year, probably at least a third of them are positions in which the school committee simply moves forward with hiring someone who is probably already in the district. Districts having a bench is actually a really good thing. We encourage it, the MASS encourages it, the department encourages it. You want to have administrators who are becoming prepared to move forward in leadership, that's a good thing. And so about a third of the position openings that we see over the course of the year result in a school committee looking at the people who are already in the district and finding that there is someone who already meets the needs that they perceive in terms of the superintendency. Yes.
So like you had said, thank you for clarifying there's no sort of posting or process that has to
yes.
be followed. But in that case, if there's somebody in the district, like do we make an announcement to the district and then we say submit a letter of intent or something? Or is it just like, how does that
go? You don't even have to do any of those things. So there's no need for posting. All of the posting requirements largely are part of collective bargaining agreements.
Oh, gotcha.
So you don't have one of those with your superintendent. Mm-hmm. You do need to go through the public process of hiring, which really just simply means it needs to happen in a meeting in which you have an agenda that says to, you know, hire the next superintendent of the Franklin Public Schools, or however you'd want to phrase it, but to make it clear to the community that that's the intent. What you choose to do previous to that, if there is someone who meets that need, or you think might meet that need, is also up to the committee. You can have that person, you know, do some sort of a presentation. Usually you would do an interview because you're really only considering one person. Something that we do at the association, not uncommonly, is we'll do effectively like an initial review with that person, which means that I or someone else from the association would meet with them and do effectively kind of an informal interview of what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, what do you think the committee would need to know about you. We do pre-screening. Again, that's just because I always feel like I have to talk about money. Something that we would do just by virtue of you being members of the association. Nothing I'm gonna tell you about tonight is gonna cost anybody anything unless I explicitly say that. So that is something that I have done in the past for committees who feel like they effectively want kind of another set of eyes on people besides their own knowledge. So that's something else that you can choose to do if you think that you have a good candidate, but you just wanna have a confirmation or wanna be able to sort of cite that you have sort of a process of some kind. that's something else that you can choose to do. But again, that's sort of a process, however you do it. Whether there's a screening or there just sort of is a move forward to hire or those kinds of things, is something that happens in about a third of openings in the state about every year. So that's very, it doesn't tend to make headlines the same way that the searches do, so I always try to make sure I say that because you're not actually gonna hear about it. Like, you're just gonna have the next superintendent be somebody else from the district, and it's not gonna be the big, you know, there's a search and there's a posting and there's interviews. It's that the business of the district is gonna be continuing by somebody who effectively has already been involved in the business of the district. Yep. There was a hand over here.
Yep. I'm sort of a process person, so it's sort of like loosey-goosey, so I'm just trying to figure out. So we wouldn't need like a subcommittee. Okay, we would just in public meetings say, let's talk on this date about our superintendent.
Yes.
Like not even call it a deliberation, like we're just gonna talk about how we're gonna fill the position, and then we talk about it, and then another date we vote to fill it.
Or you could do, as long as that first date it was clear that you might move to vote, you could do it at a single meeting.
Wow, okay.
And that's, again, like entirely under your purview. You can entirely decide to do it that way, and it's honestly not that uncommon, not unusual.
Gotcha, okay, that's really helpful, thank you.
And I also will say that in terms of process, because sometimes I get asked this question too of like, well, what about the public or what about members of the district? In general, if the committee, first of all, is very open and public about what they intend to do, and you do what you actually say, that tends to be what makes the difference to everybody in the district. So you don't want to say, we're going to do a full public search and everybody knows that you're going to hire X because the chits are already in for X, right? That's the kind of thing where the committee, where the community says, yeah, whatever, right? If you intend to hire X and are stating that from front, that's fine. If you intend to do a full search, then you need to really do a full search. So those are kind of the things to balance out in terms of just how you communicate as a committee. Maintaining a level of trust with the community about the decisions that you're making is actually really important, not only for you, but also for the next superintendent. Yep.
Okay. But communicating that, like we can't talk separate, I can't like call Megan and say, this is an idea, and then talk to me on that. Like we have to say, I don't think we can say it tonight because this is just a workshop, right?
Well, but, right, you're not.
Some of us have ideas.
Yep.
We would need to put it on an agenda in a meeting.
And say, right.
Okay.
That we're
going to talk about the process.
Right, or you could say, you could even, if there seems to be a wide amount of interest among the committee simply to talk about the possibility of an internal candidate, that could be your posting.
Gotcha, okay.
You could come up with some sort of smoother language, but to make the deliberation about the possibility of hiring an internal candidate.
Okay, so it could be that specific.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. And in which case, yes, you've then had the conversation in public session, you've gotten a feel of where everybody is, you've decided together how to move forward. Yep.
Great, thanks.
Great, yep.
So Tracy, can you talk a little bit about as a school committee, what type of questions or things they might think about to help determine what type of process they may want to follow, whether it be, hey, we think we have someone internal, we don't want a process, or hey, we do want to post, or you know, we do want to do our own search, or I know in the past we've been hiring a consultant to do the search, but you know, what factors do you consider? For instance, I think about how many, do you know how many current superintendent openings there are?
So we're at a point in, we're sort of at this tipping point in the year, right? So we've got the superintendents who have kind of either from the beginning of the year or from, you know, partway through the fall indicated that they're going to be leaving or that they're retiring. There will be another round that will happen in the spring. So I don't think that we know the full answer to that yet. We, let's see, at the association, we're currently doing 7 or 8 searches. We've just completed, I think, 3. I'm talking here and I'm talking to another district this week. So I know of at least 15. Which probably means that there's at least 20, given the proportion that NESDEC, for example, usually staffs. And that's probably not all of them. To answer what probably is the piece behind your question in terms of kind of what's the field like, I would say that headlines to the contrary, right? We all read the headline that, you know, that there's a dwindling supply of superintendents and no one's going to apply for these jobs anymore, which is what the Hechinger report had, I guess, a couple weeks ago. Know that there's no one in Massachusetts who stresses more about that question than the association, because this is part of what we do. And not from a fiscal point of view, but you all need to have superintendents. We have not as yet seen a dwindling in the number of people who are applying, or a particular skyrocketing of the number of superintendents who are retiring so far. What we did see last year in our searches is we saw, I would say, about the same number of searches as usual, but what we didn't see is we didn't see the same number of, say, deputy and assistant superintendents who were then applying to become superintendents. We had a lot of that central admin that we kind of thought were probably ready to jump, who didn't jump last year. It was a lot of superintendents who were full superintendents, had been serving as superintendents, who then sort of moved to a different district. Mm-hmm. That has changed. This year, I've been actually seeing assistant superintendents applying, which to me communicates that it feels a little safer in some way, right? It feels like they feel like things have calmed down enough where they can potentially handle being the new person on the job. We haven't seen, I think, numbers of applications particularly dwindle, and I mean, from the searches, the positions that are open that I am aware of, I don't know of, I think I know of any. I don't think that the kind of district that you represent has a lot of, say, competition, right? So right now I'm doing the Sutton Public School search, I'm doing the Leicester Public School search. I think that they're gonna get some of the same applicants. I think that they may even see some of the same finalists, and I've told them about that. But that's way central Mass. Those are very different districts from yours. You're not necessarily gonna see the same applicants that either of them would see. You're not gonna see the same applicants that Athol Royalston's gonna see. So I think that you're in a different space, both geographically and in terms of the kind of district you are, in terms of the applications you'll see, which is a long answer, but I hope that answers your question. Yep.
I guess what's good timing for a full search? Like, I feel like, you know, Barnstable, we're very aware of Barnstable
yes.
search, and they had really good timing, I think. They, you know, they could take their time, they weren't
yep.
in a rush, they weren't getting anywhere near June, and whereas we're like, oh, well, how long is this going to take? And, you know, like June 30th approaches.
You're kind of right on the edge.
Okay.
There is a point at which, and for me it tends to be about March,
mm-hmm.
when I start telling school committees that they need to be looking for an interim,
gotcha.
That they really can't do a search,
mm-hmm.
Which is not anything that anybody wants to hear. Now, we have done searches that have been expedited where, I mean, one of the things, for example, that we did with one of the Western Mass searches, I think last year, was they effectively kind of skipped the whole semifinalist interview process and had our field director do the pre-screening of all of the initial candidates, select the finalists, and just bring finalists for them.
Wow.
We don't do a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the searches we do have a full interim step of there being a search committee that's appointed by the school committee. They do an initial round of interviews and executive session, and then bring the finalists forward. But that is one way of expediting the search that has even been done recently, and successfully so far anyway. That superintendent's doing well. Right, so let me talk a little bit about just how a search works, since we've kind of gotten into that. There are two paths you can go in terms of a search. One is that you can yourselves manage the search, which is, again, entirely under your purview. You can decide to do that with the resources that are available to you in the district, with resources that are available to you from the association as well. There's things that just by virtue of you being members, we take care of. So we're happy to post positions. We're happy to help you with language. We're happy to help you put brochure together. We can give you interview questions. We can make sure that all of your information gets out, gets shared with MASS, gets shared with our lists, all of those sorts of things. That is all things that we'll do just by virtue of you being members. You then also can hire a consultant to do a search. So MASC does do that. That is not why I'm here this evening, but that is something that we do. It is something that NASDAQ does. It's something that a number of other organizations in Massachusetts do. You would need to, by virtue of the Chapter 30B law, you would need to go out and get at least three estimates. They're not bids. You don't have to go through an RFP process. It's not for your district. It will not be as expensive as needing to go to an RFP process. Get three, choose one, again, public session, public meeting, and then that means that you then have someone who's staffing the search. So they are at all, you know, they presumably in a full search are going out collecting a whole bunch of information from the district, having meetings with teachers, having meetings with staff members, having meetings with parents, having meetings with students, coming back to you with a report that says, effectively, here's where your district is at, here's what's working well, here's not what's not working well, and here's what we heard your district saying in terms of what you need of leadership at this time. That's usually used then to put together the position profile, which is what's posted. Applications usually get then collected by the consultant, put together, and then the consultant then is part of meeting with the search committee. The search committee under 30A, which is the open meeting law, meets an executive session. There is an exception in the open meeting law allowing for executive session, intentionally because it is understood that you will get a better group of applicants if not everybody in the universe knows that everybody who is applying. So that's recognized right within the Mass General law, and we always advise committees to take advantage of it because it really does make a difference. So the search committee, usually representative of the community, has parents, teachers, students, and so forth on it. They do an initial review, they do an initial round of interviews, they make selections, they recommend finalists to you, and then we move forward from there. In public session, you have interviews, you visit sites, they visit here, and then you make a selection. And I think there was a hand up. Not a hand up, okay, yes.
Do you have like a price range for what some of these firms might charge?
So the association is $10,500 plus expenses. And to be blunt, expenses is mileage and, you know, making sure that the search consultant doesn't keel over from hunger and what else gets put in there. If you decided to do a mailing, if you decided to do advertising, both of which I will tell you bluntly, we usually advise against because it's not worth it, but those also would be expenses over that. NASDAQ, for example, the last time I eavesdropped on one of their presentations, they do more like an a la carte kind of thing. They're somewhere in the 15 to 20, depending on what you decide to pick, kind of range. And yes, if you think the association is intentionally underbidding, yes, it's because we have relationships with all the school committees. It's sort of part of what we do. So I don't actually know. They're also, like, Collins Center does searches. I don't actually know how much they do. And then I can tell you about the big national firms, honestly, in part because my own committee has hired one. Then you're talking $50,000 or $60,000. You don't really, I would say, as your field director, you don't actually need to do that. Lest I freak anyone out. That is the sort of range of which is possible in the universe, though. So yes, so effectively what you're doing at that point is, I would say, you're paying for staff time, and you're paying for a certain level of kind of expertise of how best do you make sure that people are staying on time, staying on task, making sure that the basics are covered, making sure that the search committee adheres to the open meeting law and ethics laws and confidentiality. Those kinds of things are really what you're, I would say, paying for in terms of the fee. And I will say that, generally speaking, the search isn't considered done for a consultant until you've signed a contract with the superintendent. So, that's all the information on the search. Yes?
Yeah, so how long does the search typically take?
Right. So, you are correct that ideally you are notified at the beginning of the year. You could sort of take your time with doing information collecting across the fall. You post maybe before Christmas. You've got, you know, 5 weeks, 6 weeks of getting applications, and then you're moving into semifinalist interviews by the time you're getting into February or March. That's ideal. I usually say that, I was trying to add this up in the car because usually I don't actually put it all together. Usually I allow for about 2 weeks of information gathering, then putting the brochure together and getting it posted is another week. then I like there to be 5 weeks for a position to be posted. So what are we up to? We're up to 8 weeks now. 2 weeks for the search committee to do their work. If you can get it together fast enough, another 2 weeks for the finalists. So 3 months.
Okay.
Sure.
Do we, I guess, we get June 30th.
Yes.
What happens if there isn't a superintendent? Is that at that point we have an assistant in place and we're still doing the search process? Like, this
you would need to appoint an interim. I have actually even double checked this with the department. You are required in Massachusetts to have a superintendent. So you have to have somebody who bears the title.
Sorry, Elle, are you done with that?
Yeah, thank you.
So I guess I had a question earlier, and you answered part of it. So when would a district choose to appoint an interim? So in that situation where we don't have enough time.
Yes.
But there are other situations too, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, not having enough time to do a search is usually the answer.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think if there's really any others. I mean,
if I could add,
really?
I do think, I think there were some factors you have to consider. I think your very valid questions about the timeline is a genuine concern. You know, depending on what route you take. So, you know, the district, this would be my seventh superintendent. You know, we've done many different things. So we've done our own search, we've appointed interim, we've promoted the assistant up, we have, you know, paid a consultant, you know, we've done everything. And I think there's many things that you need to consider. One thing I would suggest when you do have a time crunch as well, not only the amount of time that you don't have, is that if you're getting someone that has to give then a notice under their own,
right?
You know, oftentimes that's not an issue, but more often than not it is.
Well, that's actually what's been interesting, because I actually fielded this question earlier. I usually try to make sure that my searches allow for that 60 to 90 day. I will also say that I can't recall running into anyone who was effectively denied the ability to move by their district or was actually penalized for it. And I need to go back and sort of check with my colleagues who've been doing this longer.
I would agree.
Because you're right, there usually is a notice in there, and usually try to make sure that no one's going to end up in that situation of having to go back and negotiate with their home district.
Mm-hmm. I would agree that most districts would let someone out
yes.
of the contract. I'm just saying I think it's part of the consideration.
It is.
I think the other consideration is, in my experience, when you do start late, sometimes the quality of the candidate pool
right.
narrows.
Exactly.
Now that's not to say that you shouldn't go through a process. We have had busted searches. In fact, I think Sarah's original search was a bust,
mm-hmm.
if I remember. I'm old,
yep.
getting older,
yes.
I don't know, they're all running together. But I think that original search was a bust through an agency,
yeah.
Or a consultant, and then we did our own. So sometimes, you have to think about the amount of time. Can you pull it together? And as you're thinking about that amount of time, I think it's important to keep in mind your statement to the community insofar as the inclusivity of the committee. So if you're going to have a lot of input, like you talked about that upfront survey to folks about the qualities they're looking for, I understand why we do it. I have to say, in my experience, no one ever has qualities that you wouldn't expect that they're expecting.
Mm-hmm.
But that is time consuming.
Yes.
The other thing on the back end of that, so you have your initial committee if you're doing your own search, but then when you narrow it down, often you're opening it up again to the rest of the community to voluntarily have some time in front of your maybe one or two finalists, maybe, or three if you have three. So that's another time
mm-hmm.
factor, but it's an important one because as a committee, I believe you need to think about is you want buy-in of your candidate, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want people to feel that they were included in the process and got to meet the individual they are going to be the leader. So I think you need to think about that as part of your thought process. What I've struggled with, and I know, you know, you talked about some of the statistics, is the quality of candidates that you do get in general, and then if your time frame is narrowed, I just don't think you're obligated to finish and find someone from that search if you are not comfortable with that candidate pool, and that's
absolutely
important.
That's
important.
So, and then at that point, you go to an interim. You'd say, like, you know what, we're not agreeing on any of these candidates. We're going to go to an interim and then do like the nice long process next year.
That's an option.
Yeah.
For sure.
And if we do the interim would be there for the entire school year.
That's up to you.
Okay.
You would put that into the contract.
Okay.
Yep. You effectively set your own deadline.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
What are the rules for the interim? Do they need to have their license?
They should be in the same position effectively, of at least have the initial licensure.
So the reason I asked about the waiver is I do know that. There are three stages of licensure that you spoke of. You know, you can hire anyone at any stage in that licensure process.
Mm-hmm.
And the superintendent is also, it's an assistant superintendent licensure. So if you're an assistant superintendent, you qualify for the superintendent as well. You know, I only asked about the waiver because there's a lot of flux.
We tend to get those for superintendents if we have someone who's retired coming back in and we have to do a critical shortage waiver.
Yeah.
That tends to be the place that the association runs into them, is effectively retired superintendents who are doing interim positions.
Yeah.
I haven't really run into them for people who are effectively just sort of serving as superintendent, even if they're serving a superintendent in an interim position, if they're not actually already retired superintendents.
Right, and I think we use them only if someone's in the process and they just have to finish one. You mentioned the hours.
Right.
But
and of course, the Boston Globe made headlines because the Boston superintendent hadn't passed.
Yeah, so you probably.
That's unusual. That's unusual.
But I think those are some factors to think about as a committee. Is one, do you want to do? Are you comfortable doing your own search? I'm happy to help if that's what you wanted. But one, do you want to do your own search? Two, would you want to get a consultant to help you with the search? Three, what would your process look like regardless of whether or not you had a consultant? How participatory do you want it to be? Do you think there's someone in-house that you want to approach, I guess? Was that other option? Because you do have that option to do that. When we've had internal candidates in the past that may have been interested, we've made them part of the, we're still going to open it up, and you're part of the process, and you become part of the process. So, you don't have to do that, but people do that so that other people may feel that you are trying to get the best candidate and not assuming that yours is the best candidate, or maybe you just are comfortable and they're the best candidate. It's just you have all those options.
So I guess I'm just curious, how does the open meeting law affect our ability to have discussions? Like, so we can only discuss it in a posted meeting?
Yes.
Okay. So if we wanted an internal candidate, if we wanted a search, it all had to be in an open meeting?
Yes.
Gotcha. So if there was a viable internal candidate,
mm-hmm.
we would not have to post it.
If
the committee decided on it.
If there was a viable internal candidate, you would need to post whatever deliberation you were having in order to decide that internal candidate was going to be your next superintendent and to vote to hire that person. That would be what your agenda would have to be posted as. Because that does need to happen in an open session.
Okay.
So that is within your purview. Some things, again, I think you need to think about as a committee is that should that also be the route that you go? Is that other inclusivity piece, even if it's somewhat internal, do you have people give an opportunity to either provide you, gather feedback, provide you feedback, have a, question and answer, are they going to buy into who you're selecting as the leader?
Mm-hmm. I will say that we find that when a committee decides together, that actually happens. I wouldn't recommend having an individual person sort of put up and then sort of have the entire community say yes or no, because effectively that from my perspective is that this is actually your authority, and also having an individual that you're not going to get all yeses. You all know that.
I'm not suggesting.
Yes. You're never going to make everyone happy.
Suggesting a yes or no. What I'm suggesting is that. And I guess I wasn't clear, but not that a yes or no But if you're making that decision and you're not hearing feedback about it,
gotcha.
That's what I'm talking. I'm not suggesting it. It's your decision, and at the end of the day, it's your decision. But you know, do you want the community feedback? Do you want them to feel heard? Even if it's in an internal candidate that you just want to put in a position. And that's up to you. I'm just saying I don't want you to be remiss in not thinking about that overarching picture.
And for like an internal candidate, we could have them in, and like you could say like, oh, there's a 1-year contract.
Yep.
And then revisit after a year.
And honestly, I think that rather than doing, you know, any sort of having a sort of an internal review of some kind initially ahead of hiring, I think is fine. I think rather than having an individual who then is the only person you're putting forward, is then put through any sort of not a public review, but something of that nature, it is better if the committee feels solid on that decision to actually make the decision and then effectively to be gathering feedback, at which point you then would be deciding whether or not to extend. To me, if that makes sense to your point. You had your hand up though.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, do you have a recent example of another school committee that made an internal hire in that way? Like
I am absolutely going to blank out because I always blank out when I have this question. We've actually even had, I want to say that there's actually even been ones that have happened in the recent past. I would have to go back to the office and look. I'm sorry. It's not
okay,
that
no, it's not part of this.
I will say that
what we can learn from that.
I don't know of any. I can't think of any recent hires of school committees. NAIDIC's not one of my districts, so I wouldn't be able to tell you off the top of my head. I can't think of any where there's effectively been something that's been on fire immediately. I am sure that I can give. We'll be able to give you examples once I go pick the brains of my fellow field directors. The one that I have been involved in most recently is a couple of years old at this point, which was the assistant superintendent of Quabbin Regional. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they had me come in. The assistant superintendent had been there for a number of years. The committee had me come in. They were going back and forth about whether or not they wanted to do a search. They actually had me do some initial work in the district in terms of public process. And then when I met with them to give them the information, they said, actually, given the information that we have from you, we'd like you now to review our assistant superintendent. So she and I met for coffee. We had an interview. I went back to the school committee and I reported what I had found. And then they moved forward with hiring her. And she's been the superintendent now there for probably 5 years. And they did not consider any other candidates. That was something that they moved forward with immediately. We're honestly not even always involved in those. Sometimes we'll have this kind of a conversation, and then that's kind of the end of it. And as I said, those are the ones that don't make headlines because it's just an internal thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. Then sort of to follow up with that and to kind of interweave into Denise's question a little bit. We're in the, if we were to ask you to interview, what kind of do like pre-interviews or like pre-screening, where in the process in regards to public, like getting the public involved in the process with that, would you come in to do like the pre-screening, pre-interview, whatever you were calling it?
So what happened in Quabbin is that they actually had hired us to do a search. And then we ended up having this sort of weird negotiation as to like, well, we didn't do the full search, so what are you going to pay for kind of conversation. I don't actually get involved in those. That's my boss's job. So that was an unusual one in that they kind of then, as they were sort of thinking more about it, decided that actually they had a very good viable candidate. And I will say that something that I do think is important for you to know is that if there is a strong internal candidate, that is generally known among other applicants, in part because I will get a phone call and I'll be asked, and I am always honest with people who apply, and that will affect the candidate pool. There will be people who will not apply for a position if there's a strong internal candidate. So that I completely, particularly from a school committee perspective, understand the, well, we're going to throw it open and make sure everybody knows that we've really done a full search.
Yeah.
But if you've got a strong internal candidate, you haven't had everybody apply who would if you didn't have a strong internal candidate. And that's just the nature of the beast.
But then so, Sarah was a finalist, people were talking.
Yeah. Yes.
And that could also prolong the process if there were to be a...
Right. I mean, and I also will say, by the way, that one thing you should keep in mind is that people who are looking for superintendencies do keep an eye on the field. So it's not unknown that you have an opening, right? It's not unknown that other places have openings. If there's somebody who's looking either for a particular community or a particular type of community, they're keeping their eyes on where people are going and where people are coming from. So that sort of question in terms, you know, I always want to have my positions posted for 4 weeks or 5 weeks. We always have this internal conversation in the office as to whether or not it's necessary, in part because a lot of the people who are going to apply already knew the position was going to be posted and are going to apply as soon as it shows up. And honestly, the other reason is because at least half of them all apply in the last 24 hours because that's just how it works for reasons that completely escape you, but nonetheless, it's true. You know, we always have them up for that length of time to make sure that everybody gets a chance to know that it's out there, but there certainly are many people who are going to know as soon as the position's open.
So Tracy, can you, so if, I guess regardless of who's doing the search,
yep.
if they want to do a search, you put a posting out there.
Yep.
So let's say we post it at your site and our School Spring site, people know where to go and look. I guess I wonder about not being as familiar with school committee law.
Yep.
You know, at what point, so there's, I'm going to be really positive here, there's 100 awesome resumes that, you know, that applied online on School Spring. You know, at what point, like, the how does the school committee whittle that down without it being a public meeting?
Right, so the first thing is you don't do it on School Spring because every administrator in the district has access to School Spring. I had a district that tried to do that, and I said, you've got to take it down because you're giving access where you shouldn't. So, so superintendent applicants are is a confidential process.
Can you explain that again? Because as far as I know, no one.
So who has access to your School Spring account? In the district?
Well, for that particular posting, it wouldn't be everybody. So I'm not sure. I want to understand where that's coming from, just make sure.
So,
in the future, I'm not doing it.
Right, so generally speaking, when there's a posting on School Spring, anyone who's in the district who is effectively part of the hiring process has access to what those applications are.
Only if you set it up that way.
Okay, yeah. And honestly, superintendent postings don't go up on School Spring. Like, that's not where people look for them in general. So we don't post on School Spring. I don't think that's like posted on School Spring. We've actually started telling people not to post their school finance positions on School Spring either, because it doesn't seem to be where people are finding them either.
I think that's how we got there.
Yeah, that's unusual because they tend not to be there. Anyway, that wasn't your question. let me make sure that I don't get my own self off course here. So if you're going through a full search, what we do is we make a commitment to the search committee that they will see all of the applications. But what we do is we give them a tiering memo. So we say, we've gone through all of the applications. Given the information that you've received, given also what we know of the field and what we know of these applicants, here are the people who we would sort of most highly recommend that you review. Here's sort of the middle tier, and here's people that we would have, you know, would suggest you probably have less interest in. That's how we usually have them whittle it, because I don't want to ever deny a search committee the chance to look at everything. But by the same token, first of all, there's a reason why you hire a consultant who actually does this and has some degree of expertise. But also, it can be useful for them. And when I do a tiering memo, I actually give it to the search committee at the same time that they get the applications. So depending on their time frame or they're looking for particular kinds of things, they actually get that at the same time.
So do they have to review? So that's assuming there's a consultant. You tear it down for them, which is great.
Yep.
And then you give them access to those resumes.
Yes.
In that memo, is that so? Do they have to meet publicly to review them, or that's also still an executive session
to
review them?
Right. So it's a posted meeting. So it's public insofar as they're a public body. But yes, it's an executive session.
Okay. So that's still private at that point. No one has to worry about their name being out there. You can all talk about who they think they then would want to move forward in the next step in the process?
Yes.
Okay, and so now they want to move forward in the next step in the process. Is that still not public?
Right, so the initial round of interviews that are done is done by the search committee, which the AG's office refers to as the semifinalists. That is also allowed to be done in executive session. So they can do an initial round of interviews in executive session, and then they can go back and deliberate again in executive session. It's only once the search committee comes back to the school committee with their finalists that the session, that all of the process then again becomes public.
And that's when you tell those finalists, hey, all bets are off, your name's going to be public, and then
right.
they can move forward with any other public interviewing that you might want to do with constituents or et cetera.
Right, and so to your point earlier about sort of broken searches, one of the things that we've started doing at the association is insisting that search committees put forward at least three names, because the conversation that I have with those finalists is, the search committee would like to put forward your name as a finalist. Do you realize at this point everything becomes public?
Mm-hmm.
Do you wish to continue?
Mm-hmm.
And we do sometimes have people say no. And if you end up in a position where you have only one finalist, you then have to start the search again because you effectively then have otherwise selected the superintendent in executive session, which is illegal. So I always tell search committees, you have to give me. Now, I will say that I don't usually have an issue with that. Usually we're having debates about whether it's five or four or three or, you know, it's not usually three or two. But I do always say that entirely because it's important for the search committee to actually have conducted its process in such a way where you end up being able to move forward.
Right. At the same time, I always try to caution people on focusing on a number rather than
Right. So school committees sometimes say, are we giving them an outline? And I say, you can, I'm going to tell you that they're probably not going to come back to you with more than six, and I'm going to not let them come back to you with fewer than three. But that's more just the nature of whittling it down
yeah.
and the amount of time. It's not any magic there.
So if there weren't a consultant doing a search and they wanted to do their own search,
yep.
and they're collecting resumes,
mm-hmm.
so how is it as a committee, legally, they can get together to tier their own resumes?
So this the search committee can get together in a posted
mm-hmm.
executive session. I mean, that's what they would be doing with us anyway. It's a posted executive session in order to make their selections for the semifinalists for interviews.
So you can do the same thing, just an executive session.
But that has to be the search committee. The school committee can't
yeah.
serve as its own search committee.
Yep.
It's, yep.
So similar, but back to the thought from earlier. If there's a possible internal candidate
yep.
and we want to sort of like discuss and deliberate whether we want to do a search and cast a wide net, whether we want to go with the internal candidate, whether we want to think about an interim because of the time crunch, whatever, like can we publicly post that for an executive session or is that a public
That's
meeting?
A public meeting.
Where we're deciding what are we going to do?
Yes.
Okay.
That's public. Yep.
So that's public. So
we just have to post a special meeting to
yeah.
discuss it.
Right.
Because
yep.
we can't wait a month to talk about
no,
it.
No, we can't
wait. So
yes.
at that point when they're talking about it, if at the end of the day they're going to decide there's an internal candidate they want to approach,
mm-hmm.
does that name become public?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, because it's public meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
remember the best way of thinking about it is executive sessions are exceptions to the open meeting law.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have one of those 10 exceptions being
right.
while you're meeting.
Yeah. So our next step would be to have a meeting to openly discuss our options and what we want to do next.
Yes.
Okay.
And just make sure that whatever you're posting is delineates any possibility of any decision you might be making that evening.
Gotcha.
All right, because we could potentially decide to move an internal candidate forward at that one meeting.
Yes.
Yes.
Whoa.
And you, again, can do that as long as you're posting
as long as it's posted. Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
Sure. Would you mind repeating that?
Sure. So the next meeting that you probably want to have is deliberating your next step.
Mm-hmm.
You could decide at that meeting that you have a viable internal candidate. If you are allowing for the possibility that meeting may be when you decide to actually move forward with approaching that internal candidate, make sure that your posting is clear that may end up being an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So is that they're just moving forward with an internal candidate, or
We could vote, right?
Or
if we
you
say
could
we
vote,
might
but
vote.
You would want you do always want to provide for free will. So the assumption would be that there is no you do not as a committee have not as a committee decided to see if that person it would be interested in pursuing this position. So you effectively want to at least allow for that option to happen, so the person can say no, because it's a little bit different from getting to the point where you're voting to hire when you've had somebody who's already been through interviews and already effectively have signaled their interest.
Yep, okay, that makes sense.
Yes.
Maybe I messed that one out. Is it simple majority?
Simple majority, yes.
Okay.
Good question.
I just want to be cognizant of the time.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Just to keep everybody.
We won't get into weighted majorities like we did when we were talking about regional school committees earlier.
Nope.
Just be grateful you're not on one where people have votes that count for two-fifths and things like that.
Yeah.
So is that locking them in to that decision at that time if they go into the meeting, open meeting, school committee meeting, and say we decided that as we're going to forego an actual search process and approach an internal candidate?
What they would effectively be doing is they would be deciding that they want to approach an internal candidate to see if that person would be interested and whether they could conclude negotiations. With the leaving, assuming that that is successful, they then would not complete a search. But effectively what they're doing is sort of tiering their options of, we have an internal candidate, we would like to approach that person and see if they are interested in being our next superintendent. Because we think that this is option one before we go on to any of the other options, which include things like searches or interims.
Okay.
So we could decide like a plan A, plan B, plan C.
Yep.
Okay.
Like when we're making our publication, we want to kind of cast a wide net to give us that latitude to say,
yes,
you know, this is what we want to do. Here's some, you know, here's some names or whatever else.
Well, right, and I mean, people can always say no.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And again, I mean, the part of the reason that if the committee feels that there's a viable internal candidate, to not just jump immediately to a search and say, well, we want to see, is because as soon as there's a viable internal candidate, you're not going to get a full vote of options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot.
And I will also say that, you know, if that is something that is successful, you then have, you know what your plan is moving forward, and then you're actually moving into transition work, which is a nice place to be at this point in the year.
Definitely. I do have one more question. So what's the difference between an interim and a one-year contract?
Mostly language. I mean, it's kind of security, really.
For the person.
That person is actually the superintendent, even if what you're doing is saying you're the superintendent for a year. You want to make sure that the language of the contract is such that you know when you're going back to the negotiating table,
gotcha.
Right? So, I mean, a lot of superintendent contracts have like 180-day notification kinds of things, at which point have you seen enough of the person to actually have that conversation? Mm-hmm. By the same token, you don't want to lose somebody who's good, who then is saying, well, it's superintendent search season again, I'm going to apply somewhere else because I don't know that I'm going to be able to keep this job.
Gotcha. So for an applicant, is a one-year contract more secure than an interim position?
Yes.
Okay.
But I mean, that also at that point, you then also are into the negotiation portion, right? So you as a committee in public session say, we want to approach this person about the position. That person is interested or not. You come back and have a public session and say, we're voting to make so-and-so superintendent subject to contract negotiations. Post an executive session around negotiations, and that's really when you have a conversation that says, I'm comfortable moving forward with giving this person a two-year contract, a three-year contract. I'm only comfortable giving this person a one-year contract. And that's something for you as a committee to decide, and also then, of course, for the other side of the table to say, well, actually, I want to have X.
Right.
That's how negotiations work. Right. Yep.
So we have, like you said earlier, we have to have a superintendent, right? Whether it's, you know, contract or interim.
Mm-hmm.
If someone moves up, you know, internally, are there any rules regarding that position being absent?
No, that's up to you as a district, really,
mm-hmm.
right?
Okay.
So the assistant superintendent positions are filled with advice and consent of the school committee. But that's also then a conversation probably for that person to have with you in terms of, I mean, obviously there's work that needs to be done by whatever that role is, how best to do that in the position. Do you need to backfill that position? Is something else gonna happen? Does a new superintendent wanna rework the administration? Those are all possibilities.
Okay.
So I know time's an issue, but I do wanna throw out one other thing to consider when we talk about in terms of sort of a 1-year contract, because
mm-hmm.
I think those are all very valid points. But when you're thinking of the nature of interim in a contract, it's the message that it's also sending to that candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different message when you send interim,
mm-hmm.
and then if you offer a 1-year contract, you're almost like saying, well, we're not really sure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a permanent position. So it's a different type of message that you're sending. So I think you need to collectively just think about that. Where sometimes interim, they know, okay, we're gonna give it a try, we're gonna put you here, we don't have enough time, and if you're successful, then there's another year where we can think and evaluate and come up with a process or not.
Yes,
but
right.
If you're just gonna give something like a 1-year contract,
mm-hmm.
whether it's internal or external, it mm-hmm. sends
yeah.
a different message.
Yeah.
I will say,
does that make sense? Or?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think all of this is a message. I also say one of the things to keep in mind with any of these possibilities is the point at which you effectively kind of go back to the table is kind of up to both parties.
Mm.
So there certainly have been circumstances where I know of this sort of notion of taking someone internal, we're going to give you a 1-year contract, and by the time they got to halfway through the year, everybody has said, this is working really well. Let's make this a 3-year contract.
Gotcha.
There's no magic that says you have to wait until you hit whatever point.
Yeah.
Generally, you want to make sure that you had at least one round of a review of some kind. Maybe it's the mid-cycle review. But that's something else to keep in mind. But yeah, I do think that notion of how secure is the person in their position
right.
is something that is very much part of the contract. It's also very much part of the communication of the school committee to that person.
Right. And whether or not they have a home to go back to
yes,
at the end of the day.
Right.
Great. So you all have my contact information. If there are other questions that come up, please by all means get in touch. And you do have more material there to review too if you wanted.
Thank you so much.
Yes. You're welcome.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.